Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, and today we have on the show with us Professor Bradley Montan, Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Colorado Boulder, who's the recent author of the book Seeking God in Science, An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design, published by Broadview Press. Some of you will remember Professor Montan, who we had on the show last year, talking about his support for intelligent design, even though he's an atheist. So I really appreciate you coming back on the show with us today to talk about your book, Professor Montan.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I have to admit that a long time ago, you actually sent me a review copy of your new book, which I read almost in its entirety and very much enjoyed. And I don't think I ever told you this, but I never actually got around to tabbing up the notes that I took on many of the pages of the book and giving you feedback. So I want to publicly apologize to you, Professor Montan, for not giving you feedback, even though I did enjoy the book very much. And I imagine that the published version is probably just as good. Well, I want to give you a lot of airtime today to talk about your own views on this topic and let you explain your views to our listeners. So you start off the book by saying that, quote, "This book is not providing a full-fledged endorsement of intelligent design, but intelligent design needs to be taken more seriously than a lot of its opponents are willing to do." I suspect we'll get into questions of where you and I agree and disagree on ID arguments a little bit later in this podcast. But for now, I'd like to ask you the question, where do you feel ID needs to be taken more seriously? And what are ID's opponents doing that shows you that they aren't taking it very seriously?
Well, one of the main things that frustrated me about ID opponents, and one of the reasons I got into writing this book in the first place, is the philosophical arguments being given against intelligent design. So I'm a philosophy professor. That's where my primary training is. So I also have a background in physics. And I saw a number of, what purported to be philosophical arguments for why intelligent design shouldn't be taken seriously or shouldn't be treated as a legitimate intellectual endeavor. Specifically, people were arguing that intelligent design isn't science, for example, or that we couldn't possibly get evidence for God or some sort of designer of the universe. Those arguments struck me as fallacious, and I wanted to set the record straight. And that was my primary inspiration for writing the whole book.
About 10 years ago, I remember Philip Johnson speaking at UCSD, giving a lecture to a packed-out audience of over 500 people, where he basically said that people need to take ID more seriously. And here you are, 10 years later, making the same complaint, so to speak. So, I mean, do you feel that things in this department have gotten worse or better in the last 10 years as you have followed this debate?
My suggestion would be that things have gotten better in the sense that ID is talked about a lot more within the intellectual community than it has been. And I'm not the only one who has this view. Obviously, there are lots of theistic philosophers who have this view. Of course, there are theistic philosophers who are opposed to intelligent design as well. But I'm more interested in the atheists and what the atheists who think intelligent design is worth talking about. For example, there's John Roberts, who's a tenured philosophy professor at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And he wrote a blurb for my book where he said, this is a great book. These ideas need to be taken more seriously. We need to put them on the table. Ned Hall, who's a philosopher at Harvard, he gave a talk at University of Idaho last year talking about how intelligent design should be discussed in school. Brandon Feitelson, who's a professor at University of California, Berkeley, has written a paper that in part criticizes the judge's decision in the Dover trial and takes issue with the sort of reasoning that suggests that intelligent design isn't scientific. So there's a number of people, not just me, who have this view. And then in conversation with people as well, people who don't have any bone to pick in this debate, a lot of them are saying, yes, I find it amazing how virulent the anti-intelligent design opponents are and how it doesn't seem warranted given the state of the evidence on the two sides. And I'm talking about not just everyday people, everyday people are great, but I'm talking about, professors, philosophy professors who are educated people and are especially trained to evaluate arguments.
That's a very interesting perspective that you have, Professor Montan, and I think that it makes a lot of sense. I think that sometimes the extreme vitriol that people respond to ID with makes sort of reasonable people think, what? Why is this provoking such a strong response? And, I mean, I appreciate the fact that your book is really trying to encourage people to take ID more seriously. So I think it's a good step in that direction, absolutely. Another thing that I appreciate your book, and you mentioned this a few minutes ago, is that you tackle many of the common misrepresentations of ID, that it's trying to bring theocracy, that it's not science, all these sorts of things. And you use one of the main promulgators of these conspiracy theories, Barbara Forrest, as sort of your antagonist at the beginning of the book. And I guess she makes it pretty easy for you, but could we talk briefly about some of these common misrepresentations or bad arguments against ID, because I can see that you're very good at getting past those to talk about the real issues.
Sure. Yeah, Barbara Forrest says intelligent design is the most recent version of creationism. She says it's a code for a religious belief in a supernatural creator. And she says the goal of the intelligent design movement is to gain equal time for creationism in American public schools. And she goes even crazier. She says intelligent design proponents are trying to undermine secular constitutional democracy. And all this is just either false or completely misguided, or actually both, probably. Intelligent design theory is different than creationism. If you take any sort of standard definition of creationism, it's not young earth creationism. It's not the view that species were specially created. So it's a different doctrine than that. It's not essentially supernatural. Intelligent design theory is about saying that there's evidence of some sort of cosmic designer of life on Earth. That designer could well be God, and it could very well be the case that most all intelligent design proponents believe that that designer is God. But that doesn't mean that intelligent design itself is a supernatural doctrine. The doctrine itself is about there being a designer, and then there's a further question about what the nature of the designer is. Also, intelligent design is about a lot more than teaching in schools. Just because some intelligent design proponents think it should be taught in schools doesn't mean that the scientific, or at least scientifically related doctrines themselves, have anything to do with that. It strikes me from all my interactions with intelligent design proponents, it's rather just silly to say that they're trying to undermine secular constitutional democracy. But even if they are, it doesn't matter for the truth of their scientific based arguments.
Very true. But it certainly makes good headlines, wouldn't you say?
when you say intelligent design proponents are trying to undermine secular constitutional democracy, when you say they're proponents of theocracy, yes, that does prick people's interest.
And now you talk about defining creationism and how it's different from ID. One of the things that I found very interesting about your book, and I have to say when I read your draft, I was actually surprised, but pleasantly surprised that you did this, because I don't think very many people have taken the time to do this. But you spend a lot of time in your book just talking about the definition of intelligent design and how do we define ID. So I'd like to ask you, why do you spend so much time in your book talking about the definition of ID?
Partly because there's been such confusion about this in the literature and debate about this. There's such debate about whether intelligent design is supernatural or not. And there's debate about what the nature of the designer is that intelligent design proponents are talking about. And there's debate about what is the difference between intelligent design and creationism. And I thought it would be helpful to wade into that. And it was sort of a morass from my experience reading the literature and talking to people. And I wanted to set it all straight and just get it, you know, all on the table and discuss all the relevant issues. And I think the discussion is really interesting. It raises really interesting issues about, for example, the nature of explanation in science. And what it is to appeal to a designer as an explanation for some sort of physical process. How there could be some aspects of reality that don't have an explanation at all. And what that has to do with the hypothesis that there's a designer. So when one gets into it, it's not just a question of, oh, what exactly is the definition of intelligent design? It gets into lots of interesting philosophical issues about what sort of evidence one could get for intelligent design doctrine and how the different parts of the intelligent design arguments relate to each other. With regard to the latter point, how the different parts of the intelligent design arguments relate to each other, some intelligent design arguments focus on evolution. In fact, that seems to be the ones that most people focus on in the literature. But then there are other intelligent design arguments out there as well, like arguments based on the origin of life. And oftentimes people consider physics-based arguments to be intelligent design arguments, like the fine-tuning argument. The fact that the fundamental constants seem fine-tuned for life, in the sense that if the value of the constant were slightly different than it actually is, life couldn't exist. Some people say that provides evidence for the existence of God. And this is often considered to be an intelligent design argument. So I think it's interesting to look into all that and try to see what the relation is between the physics-based arguments and the biology-based arguments.
Yes, I thought that was one of the most helpful parts of your discussion of the definitions of intelligent design, in that you really brought out the fact that ID is not just limited to biology, and people often forget that. And even some critics of intelligent design and biology, people like Ken Miller, say that they accept the evidence for design in cosmology. And so these are very important distinctions to make, and I really think that you did a good job. I think that someone who reads your book, Professor Montan, will not come away with very many misconceptions about what intelligent design is.
And I just want to say, since we're on this topic and since I'm talking to you, that it's not like I talked to or got advice from Discovery Institute people on any of this. You know, I criticize the Discovery Institute statement of intelligent design. I say in my book, that statement doesn't work at all. Let's see
yes.
if we can replace it with something better. So I remember you offered to give me comments on my book, and I said, well, actually, it's too late. You know, it's already gone to press. So, you know, I didn't want to, like, become a vehicle for Discovery Institute or anything like that. I want to maintain a critical stance, but when ideas are on the right track, or at least worth discussing, I'm going to say they're on the right track, and aren't going to say they're worth discussing.
Yes, I have my whole marked-up version of your draft sitting right next to me right now, Professor Montan, that has never been sent back to you. So you definitely didn't get any feedback, from me at least, but I think that you make a good point. I mean, and I think it's important for people to remember that ID is much bigger than Discovery Institute. I mean, it's not like Discovery Institute owns the copyright to intelligent design or something like that. And so it's actually really great to see folks out there taking these ideas, moving the ball down the field and refining them. And I think that many of your criticisms, the kind of, you know, constructive criticisms that you bring out in your book are actually very helpful. Well, we're coming probably to the end of the first discussion of your book for this first podcast. So can you stay with us for a second podcast, Professor Montan?
Sure.
Okay. Well, again, for our listeners, the book is Seeking God in Science, An Atheist Defends Intelligent Design, recently published by Broadview Press by Bradley Montan, Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Colorado Boulder. I highly recommend it. As the subtitle suggests, this is a book by an atheist who is taking ID seriously and gives a very thoughtful treatment of the subject. So thank you, Professor Montan, for being on the show with us.
Thank you, Katie.
I'm Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Stay tuned for more with Bradley Montan on his book, Seeking God in Science. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.